outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, Jim Thorne.
Good evening and welcome to the Maine Outdoors. As V. Paul Reynolds would say, Maine's longest continuously running outdoor radio program dedicated to everything in the Maine outdoors and to you, the listener. So welcome, listeners, no matter where you're listening to us from in the great state of Maine, welcome to the Maine Outdoors. It is Sunday, January 26th, the last weekend in January. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, love it.
Well, let's go around the camp tonight. We've got a little fire going. It's not a big fire. It was 40 degrees on my truck on the way in, so we don't have the heat cranked up. In fact, we got the door cracked on the front of the camp and a little fire going. Hmm. And we have Norm Plord tending over there. How good. Are you, Norm?
Good, Jim. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Did you get out at all this weekend?
No, not at all. I'm busy around the house, but
yeah,
I'm kind of getting spring fever, you know. It's like... this warm weather and snow melting is like, wow.
I'm guessing you save your kitchen passes for fly fishing.
This year, I got so many things going on since since I've retired that life will be quite interesting. But yes, I definitely will be doing stuff.
You say that retired word. I just think of you, you know, going out and getting the paper and coming back in and going out and getting the mail.
No, I get fishing trips and working at a friend's hunting lodge up north. I got quite a bit of irons in the fire, which is really nice.
Sounds like fun.
It is.
You got somebody in there beside you?
I do, the master of the board here.
Good evening, folks. don't fall out of your chair, Jim. Good evening, folks. Hi, Lorraine. Haven't talked to you for quite a while. And haven't been here for 2 or 3 weeks. Doing a lot better, feeling a lot better.
That's
and
good.
Looking forward to spring. But didn't the ice get thin on Fields Pond?
Yeah, I imagine it was a little slushy on top.
No, it's actually bare ice on top with a little bit of water. The snow is all gone.
Huh.
2 to 3 inches of ice in some spots, less in others.
Hey, you said you had a guy out there with an ice auger that he set it down and it just punched right through the ice.
It did. Yeah, he was up near the inlet.
So parked right next to his ATV, right?
Yeah.
We'll go into that a little bit later on in the show.
Yep.
We had some misfortunes on the ice, unfortunately, this weekend.
And on the trail.
On the trail, that's right.
God bless him.
Yeah. And you were playing a little tune I heard up Fields Pond this past weekend.
Yes. Yeah, the Kern Homestead had their ice harvest, which they couldn't harvest ice because there wasn't enough ice to harvest. But we had music, some bluegrass and music in the living room and all kinds of good food and stews and chili in the kitchen. And all the kids and everybody had things to do, and it was a wonderful time. The blacksmith shop was open and going, and the letter shop. Folks, if you ever have a chance to go to the Kern Homestead, don't miss it. It's a wonderful, wonderful time.
Well, it sounds like it.
It is. I look forward to it.
And my guest tonight was there also this weekend, as I understand it,
just
out of coincidence, Jacob Pelkey. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, I poked my head in at the Kern Homestead yesterday, and there was a crowd there. There was a lot going on. They had the horses there that were ready to haul ice, but like
and
you said.
And a good day for it, too.
Yeah.
That was
before
the rains.
Beautiful day.
Came. Yeah.
Yeah.
No ice.
Well, we'll get into Jacob Pelkey in a little bit. We'll tease you on that one for a minute and let you know why Jacob's down here tonight. Let's see. Well, let's hit the main The Outdoor Digest for Maine is brought to you this week and every week by my favorite publication.
And mine.
And Jim's, the Northwoods Sporting Journal.
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day. Early in the morning, late in the evening, I'm getting red, dirt rich, and Flint River paid.
All right. Well, today is Sunday, January 26th, the last weekend of January for 2020. Sunrise was this morning at 7:01 a.m. I think we're going to break into the 6:59 category starting tomorrow or Tuesday. The sunset was at 4:34 p.m. this afternoon. That makes the length of day 9 hours and 33 minutes, which is an increase of some 46 minutes since our shortest day back in that stretch, December 21st through the 24th.
And I'm loving it.
That's right.
Does that come at the beginning of the day or the end of the day?
A little bit of both. Okay. A little bit of both, which is nice. We noticed that this morning at 6-something, it was already starting to get light.
Yes.
And said that was, nice. And let's see. Well, since last weekend, we haven't changed on our information about the moon. The last full moon was January 10th. That was the Wolf Moon. And our next full moon is on February the 9th, which is the Snow Moon. And then after that, March 9th is the Worm Moon, where I don't know how many worms are going to be out in Maine, but somewhere there's going to be some worms crawling around for somebody. Well, let's get right into the bad news first. We had another snowmobile accident, of course, last Sunday. About an hour after we concluded our show, there was a 56-year-old New Hampshire man who died when his snowmobile went through the thin ice on Moosehead Lake near the mouth of Moose River. That's on the west side of Moosehead Lake, and that was, of course, last Sunday. And I hold here in my hand a statement from Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife that a Connecticut woman was killed in a snowmobile accident. And also they had an incident of a sled dog, Musher, was struck by a snowmobile.
Mm-hmm. No and, need of that.
No.
None.
And the first one was in Brownville at approximately 11:50 a.m. on Saturday, yesterday, January 25th. A snowmobile collided with a sled dog, Musher, North Brownville Junction. And the Musher was taking part in a sled race that was going on ITS 110. And the snowmobile was traveling towards a sled dog team on the trail. And the snowmobile operator could not keep control of the snowmobile and sideswiped the dog sled and the Musher. Now, the dog sled Musher was knocked off his sled, and the snowmobiler did not stop and continued to travel north towards KI, the Katahdin Ironworks. The sled dog Musher refused medical treatment at the scene, and the crash is still under investigation by the Maine Warden Service. So, hopefully, anyone with investigation about that crash or may know the identity of the snowmobiler is asked to call Department of Public Safety at 207-973-3700. And in Solon on Ironbound Pond, there was a woman, 43, of Stamford, Connecticut, was operating her snowmobile on the pond and headed towards the shoreline at approximately 9:45 p.m. And she drove off the ice and struck the shoreline. She was ejected from the machine and struck the tree line. Mm-hmm. She was not wearing a helmet and died at the scene. It appears speed and operator inexperience are likely factors of the crash. The Athens Fire Department, Solon Fire Department, and Somerset Sheriff's Office all assisted at the scene. So just a reminder, always wear your helmet if you're going to be on a snow sled, no matter how much experience you have or how far you're going.
Or how warm it is.
That's right. And certainly if you have sleds and you have somebody who's either impaired or not experienced on snowmobiles, don't just give them carte blanche and put them on a snow sled and watch them go. So give them some pointers, and if they aren't, then just don't turn it over to them. So,
you know, Jimmy, if you don't like being at funerals, wear your helmet.
Yes, that's a good one. All right. Well, let's see what else we have going on. Of course, we have all the ice fishing derbies, and we already forecasted our sportsman shows in Orono, March 13th and 14th and 15th, Presque Isle, March 21st and 22nd, and Augusta, March 27th, 28th, and 29th. And we also want to tickle the cabin fever reliever and brewer, and that is Saturday and Sunday, February 29th and March 1st. That's free.
That is free.
And Saturday is 10 to 5, and Sunday is 10 to 3, and that's the end of February, 1st of March, that weekend.
Brewer Auditorium.
At the Brewer Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
Free. Bring the kids. Bring whoever you want. Always a good time.
Some of the best hot dogs ever there.
Say we.
Chili stew.
Chili, yes.
All right. Well, let's do a trivia question with our guest tonight, Jacob Pelkey. Jacob is going to read the trivia question, which is good for a one-year subscription to the Northwoods Sporting Journal.
Would I like to win that?
All right.
So how many freshwater species of fish are there in Maine?
How many freshwater species of fish are there in Maine? If you think you know that answer, give us a call, 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back after this message.
More Maine Outdoors next.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne. If you're joining us, you're joining us on WVOM-FM out of Bangor, 1039. 101.3 out of Augusta, and 95.1 in Rockland.
And online.
And online at WVOMFM.com, where you can listen to our podcast. You just wait for it to scroll to the Northwoods Sporting Journal and the Maine Outdoors banner. Click on that, and you can go back quite a ways on our podcast and listen to previously aired shows. So feel free to do that. We have a caller.
We have a caller online.
All right. Hello, caller. Are you there?
How are we doing tonight?
Well, we're doing pretty good. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Mike. I'm from Warrington, but I'm down east tonight.
Oh, okay, Mike. Where are you down east?
Alexander, actually.
Well, there. I've been through Alexander a few times.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to say, do you have to be exact number? I'm not on Google or anything like a lot of these other people use, so...
I tell you what, I'm pretty flexible. You give me a number, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm going to say 17. I named off every fish in my head that I could that's in the state of Maine as far as in the waters go.
Yeah. Mike, should have used Google.
Google.
Yeah. I think you might have missed a couple.
Owl-wise or anything like that. So.
Yeah, well, and that's the key. I mean, all those little bait fish and trout and variations and so forth.
Yeah, warm water, cold water.
As we'd say.
I did all the bass, all the trout, salmon, pike, muskie, walleye, pickerel, every bass there was, all the trouts, sunapee included.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not doing bait fish.
Oh, you got
well, that's fish too? Yeah, that's a freshwater species too, so.
Well, if I added bait fish, I'm going to say another six, so I'll say 23.
Plus 17?
Yep.
Oh, man. Okay, the math's starting to come around. I think we're getting up toward that number.
Get closer.
I think that's close enough.
Yeah.
I do.
There's exactly 56.
Wow.
Yeah, that's more than I could count.
I didn't include the bait fish in my first thing. I just thought it was like fish that we were going to go out and catch and
Well, Mike,
you know, eat and stuff.
Yeah. You were working hard enough on that where I gave you credit for effort.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And it's a tough one.
Fish. There's a lot of bait fish, isn't there?
There is. And then there's a lot of variations within fish within that, you know, from rainbow trout and brook trout and brown trout and splake and Lake trout,
steelhead, and everything.
And steelhead and horn pout and yellow perch and white perch.
You know, it's funny too, because I had that, you know, horn pout. I remember being a kid up on the Machias Lakes, and those guys would be out there, the lights, fishing the horn pout.
Yes.
Whitefish was another one that people don't think about.
Oh, whitefish is great.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's it. According to Maine.gov, there are 56 species of freshwater fish in Maine. And that's my whole point of a trivia question, is just kind of giving everybody an idea of something they didn't know. And you know,
I tell you what, that was a good question. Sometimes the questions I'm thinking, I don't know about the outdoor thing, but that one there is definitely a good one.
Oh, good. Do you currently receive the Northwoods Sport and Journal?
I've got a copy of it. It gets over in the spring, but what I'm going to do is I'm gonna donate that to a guy that I've been friends with for like 45 years, and he's actually a guide, and I'm going to call him up, get his address, and I'll call back a little later and give him the address.
Oh, thank you, Mike. You didn't have to do that for me.
Jimmy, I know you get it anyway.
Yeah, I do.
All right.
Glad to hear you back, buddy.
All right. And so we'll look for your call later on in the broadcast, Mike.
Yeah, I'll give you a holler later. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, good. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Bye now.
All right.
My buddy.
It's like Christmas all over again for you, Jim.
I'll tell you, that's one thing I've learned working here is I can't bring a guest in that's not from where Jim is or knows who Jim is or knows somebody who knows who Jim is. So I didn't expect anything less. So.
Well, you know what a little more trivia is that you realize that this is probably the first time in the studio I've ever seen it where all the people in the studio right now are from the Aroostook County originally.
Oh, there. Yep. See, never thought about that one.
And we all had to drive down to Bangor tonight to be on air.
And we were just talking about Rick Tyler being from Aroostook County, too.
I didn't know that. Presque Isle,
Washburn area.
Taking over the airwaves. Well, good. Well, our guest this evening, cat's out of the bag now, Jacob Pelkey. Jacob Pelkey is the marketing manager for Micmac Farms up in Caribou, Maine, where they're raising more than 50,000 Maine brook trout.
Yeah.
And Micmac Farms, for those of you who may not know, is a tribal enterprise of the Aroostook Band of Micmacs, which is a federally recognized Native American tribe. And Jacob has been with the farm for 2.5 years now and works to raise awareness of Micmac Farms' mission of creating access to wholesome and nutritious foods raised with natural methods.
Yeah.
I already welcomed you once, but welcome again, Jacob.
Well, thanks, Jim. That pretty much sums me up really well.
All right. We can go now.
And we're off the air.
Well, not quite. You're not going to get out of it quite that easy. I do have a question or two more for you.
Now go ahead.
I know you through, you started, I think it was 2 years ago maybe, supplying for the Presque Isle Fish and Game Club's sportsman show, their brook trout for their kids' pond.
Yeah, so we do their children's fishing pond for them with about 300 of the brook trout that we're raising right there in Caribou.
Yeah, which scared the bejesus out of my granddaughter because she hooked one of those babies, and you would have thought it was an Atlantic salmon the way it came out of that water.
Yeah, we bring the big ones. We're not messing around with the little guys.
Yeah, lively is an understatement.
That's really neat for kids.
There wasn't a kid anywhere near that pond that wasn't wet. Because that fish came out and was just thrashing, and I said, "Wow, those aren't the regular fish that are usually in there."
No, a couple of years ago they were using fish from down the Enfield hatchery that were just about 8 inches, I think. That's what I heard, anyway. So we surprised them when we brought our 15 to 17 inch 2-year-old fish for them.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Wow.
At nighttime, actually, the Elks Club has to put a net over the fishing ponds so that they don't jump onto the floor.
Wow. Yeah, that is amazing. Which brings me to the next question: the trout that you raise, this 50,000. Brook trout, I've been to your facility up there in Caribou. It's quite amazing. You have the little, I say little tanks, they're as big as this room.
Yeah.
With the the eggs in them.
Yep.
And then you have the ones with the, what's the next, the fry or the mole? Or
well, we call them the sac fry when they're in that those fry. Smaller round tanks. And each one of those tanks is probably 300 gallons, so they're not too small. But okay. Then moving on from that, they go into a 15,000-gallon tank, and they're about what would be called fingerling trout for a lot of people, mm-hmm. maybe about 4 inches when we put them in there.
Yeah.
And then we have a second 15,000-gallon tank where we have the about 18 months to 2.5-year-old fish, and they're all about 15 to 17 inches of the main brook trout.
Now, these tanks, are they round or raceways? Or
yeah. So we're using groundwater. They're raceways. So if you envision them long ovals, and
yeah.
each one of those raceways has four different currents in there, so it gives the fish a lot of swimming space compared to what you would see in a round tank
right.
or a regular pour-over system where the current's just coming from one direction.
Okay.
I like your choice, but I have to ask a question. Why? I mean, they're native brook trout, right? I mean, you said that they're collected one generation from wild, or?
Yeah, so that's what I always say, is they're one generation from wild, because what we do is we get our eggs directly from the state of Maine. So we'll go down to the Enfield hatchery every December, and we'll get about 35,000 eggs to take to caribou. But what the state biologists do is they'll go out to what they call heritage waters in the state of Maine. So ours come from the Baxter Park area, and they'll go out and collect wild fish, and then they'll take them to breed in, down there in Enfield.
Yeah.
And then we take the eggs from those fish right up to caribou. So they really are. The parents of the fish were at one point out in these wild waters.
And you do... I'm going to get into this more later, but you do stock ponds.
Yeah, yeah.
You supply fish for stocking ponds. And
yeah.
And did I understand that you do some stocking for the state as well?
No, we don't do them for the state themselves, but
okay.
for private pond stockers. Like a lot of these farm ponds we drive by in Aroostook County, maybe a private landowner who has his own pond. We have done one public water down in Pittsfield at Great Moose Pond. A collective group of individuals got together down there.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not 100% sure what had happened, but for a long time the state had been stocking brook trout into that body of water, but for a few seasons they had not stocked it. So collectively they had pursued us, and we did stock that for them.
Yeah. And did you ever look at another species, or are you considering other species? Because I know there's throughout the state of Maine there's brook trout, brown trout, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so the eastern brook trout is what we refer to as the Maine brook trout. That's really the last true stronghold for that native fish, is here in Maine, with substantial waters that support a breeding population of the fish. So we're pretty excited about raising the Maine brook trout, because as the tribe, it's culturally significant.
Announce it.
Yeah. All right. Well, right now we're going to do our 7:30 break. When we come back, I want to talk some more about this and see if I have a lot more questions for you.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. We'll be back after this message on the Maine Outdoors. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne from the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And my guest this evening is the marketing manager for Micmac Farms up in Caribou, Jacob Pelkey. And Jacob is joining us tonight and telling us all about the Maine brook trout that they raise up there from just eggs on up through. And one of the things that I did talk about with you off air before the show was the possibility of expanding.
Yeah.
Because you had mentioned that, 50,000 fish might seem like a lot of fish, but when you start doling them out and selling them and and stocking and all that, they go pretty quick. They get spoken for pretty quick, don't they?
Yeah, they do get spoken for pretty quick. So we always... We try to earmark the fish if they're going to be for food or if they'll be for the pond stocking purpose, because we have two reasons for raising the fish. So at this time, we've done really well with the food fish, and it's really great in the restaurants. But also the pond stocking has just really taken off. whereas there's not as many hatcheries in the state as maybe there once was a few years back.
Yeah.
So we're raising the eastern brook trout, and we'll be expanding the hatchery, of course, to meet the demand of that, and hopefully looking at an area that'll be fourfold, I think.
All right. And you said you did, before we went on break, you said that you were considering other species of fish to stock.
Yeah, we've always talked about what it would look like if we were raising Arctic char, we've talked about. And we've also talked about the idea of raising the eels. But I think we're going to stay with the main brook trout just because it's so established in the pond stocking. And it's something that we're getting pretty good at raising and recognized for.
And they're good. I mean, they turn out. I mean, I've seen them. You just, it's as good of trout as you would ever get
out of
a main brook, because, I mean, they're lively. They look fantastic. Their colors are gorgeous, so.
Yeah, no, the flesh, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of folks, they're hesitant about a farmed brook trout. And the first thing they mention is, oh, is it a pale trout? And a lot of times what happens is trout, it depends on what their diet is when they're in those wild bodies of water. But the trout that we're raising at the farm, we're feeding them, there's a lot of fish meal and shrimp in the diet. So the flesh on the fish is a bright pink flesh, like a salmon flesh color.
Okay.
And it really brings out that natural flavor that we as sportsmen know that's a really great wild trout, and it tastes just like that.
Oh,
you gotta go check out their ponds.
Let's go out and see them, Norm.
That's right.
Sounds good to me.
Get some samples.
I should have brought some down for you to give away tonight.
Well, that's good. And where do you sell these brook trout at?
Well, so directly the pond stockers, as I call them, folks who are looking to put the fish in their private ponds, they can call the farm and we'll deliver statewide to them. But also our local soil and water conservation districts, which are part of the USDA Rural Development Offices,
mm-hmm.
They work a lot with backyard farmers and conservation. So for them, every spring they have trout fundraisers to support conservation efforts in their area.
And how big a pond has to be to support so many fish? And I know oxygen levels are important when you're talking about, you know, how many trout you're going to put in there.
Yeah, well, we're lucky in Maine. We have some really clean waters, and a lot of these ponds, if you just dig down, the water table comes right up, and it'll turn into a spring, which is what's desirable. It's a spring-fed pond. Yeah. So those spring-fed ponds will have higher oxygen levels naturally. Usually what we reference is we like to make sure it's a healthy pond, that you haven't been noticing any algae blooms, a lot of aquatic life, like maybe a lot of cattails around the edge, because those are going to consume a lot of the oxygen that the fish need.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the main point is that the fish have a deep place to go in those warm months like July and August. So the ponds need to be about 8 feet deep or deeper. Because that water table is probably going to drop some in July and August. So,
right,
Jason, a friend of mine had a pond that he had the trout in. I don't know where he got them from, but the birds are coming in, whatever they are, those blue herons, and taking them out.
Yeah.
And we found that if we threw like 10-foot lengths of that PVC, 4-inch PVC,
okay,
they couldn't get them, and the fish could go in there and get out of the sun, and also the birds couldn't get at them.
Yeah,
solved the problem.
Yeah, that is a concern with pond stockers, is if they're going to stock their pond with trout and hopefully they're going to fish them out, but if they can beat the otters and the herring and the osprey to it. So there's some good methods to, like you're mentioning, that would be what I would just call shelter for the fish. People do that with some boulder formations before the pond gets filled too much. You know, if you have a big backhoe or an excavator, they can throw in some boulders for the fish to take shelter in. But PVC pipes, that's a great idea that I haven't heard before.
Yeah, it worked great. It really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other, of course, there's going to be a lot of problems, but one of the ones was the horn pout.
Mm.
And I think somebody had mentioned that, you know, a lot of the blue herons and such, I don't know what the digestion process is, but sometimes they can defecate and eggs hatch out of that, or they carry them on their legs, or what it is that gets them into the pond. But when it is a pond that's made and dug and filled, and there's nothing in it but water, and they stock it with trout, and then all of a sudden there's just, you know, literally dozens and dozens of hornpout when they go to feed them.
Yeah.
I guess every so often they have to kill the pond out or do what they have to do to clean it out.
Yeah, that can be quite a process, and that's particularly something that I don't know too much about, Jim, but I have heard about the problem of new fish getting in, and particularly people who want to do bait fish at the same time as doing the trout, and they're going to compete for oxygen,
right,
and they're also going to compete for food. So,
Well, what would somebody do? What's the process if a landowner wants trout for a pond? What do they do?
Yeah, well, hopefully, a lot of times it's a new homeowner who purchased a piece of property, and a lot of times they'll have a story of hearing that the pond used to be stocked with trout.
Mm-hmm.
But what I always like to hear is I like to hear them observe the pond for a period, because a lot of times in summers you can see algae blooms, or you can see how low that water depth really does drop in the summer, which are really important if you're considering trout.
Yeah.
The first step, of course, is the state of Maine pond stocking permit. It's a $10 fee, and it'll be good for 10 years if they grant you a permit. And that permit lists right on the back of it the state-approved options.
And that's to restock, too, if you want to?
Yeah.
Within that 10 years?
Yep. Okay. So maybe your original pond stocking permit has expired.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to renew it. And what the state does is they look at the aerial footage of that pond to see what the inlets, if there's any outlets, because what they desire is they really do desire the fish to stay in your pond and not have a chance of escaping.
Okay.
Get a caller.
All right. We have a caller, Jacob.
Oh, sure.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
All right. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Fern Lawson from Norway.
Oh, okay.
And a minute ago, you were talking about PVC pipe to put in a pond to help the fish could go inside and get it away from the herons and whatever.
Yeah.
What was the diameter? What was the diameter?
4 inch.
He said 4 inch, I believe.
Four inch. Something small enough so that the herons can't get in there.
Hmm.
But the fish can.
Okie dokie.
And it should be enough, too, so several fish can escape.
Yeah.
Use two or three of them.
What, 3 or 4 footers or what?
No, we were doing 10 footers, 8 and 10 feet.
Okay.
Yep.
10 feet by 4 inches.
Yep. Yeah, or 8 feet by 4. Use several of them.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Okay, thanks for listening. Yeah, I mean, anything just to provide a break from the predators of,
four inch.
You know, muskrat, if you get a muskrat in there, probably.
Yeah.
You can go smaller even.
Yeah. You get stuck in there. You'd only chase after one fish. That was it.
That's right.
You know, you hear a lot of stories of folks trying to stretch nets over the pond or sitting down there in a lawn chair with a firearm trying to keep them away. But yeah, there's also a chemical option for the birds, which turns the water like a blue or a green.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you notice that just driving down the road and you'll see a man-made pond, but adding chemicals is always the last choice you want to choose, I would say.
Yeah. And how many fish can you fit into a pond, typically? I mean, I know pond size varies, but is there a formula of depth and...
Boys, you know, I'd hate to have somebody put in too many fish on my recommendation, Jim, so I don't have a particular thing, but if you have a half an acre pond that's 8 feet deep, we generally say that it'll support upwards of 300 trout, which is a considerable amount. But if you're not sure, if you're a first time pond stocker, we generally recommend just trying out a couple dozen fish, seeing how they overwinter,
mm-hmm.
If they're still there the following spring. And it also gives you the opportunity to see what animals you're going to attract to your property.
And is there a formula of how well it will overwinter? It has to be at least 8 feet, you think? Or, you know, I'm trying to think of the ice and how thick the ice gets.
Ice poses a challenge too, because a lot of the spring-fed ponds, you'll notice they don't freeze completely over. You'll have a little bit of it'll be open in the wintertime for some period of time. And that's great because you want that oxygen level up in the winter. And I have heard of a few pond stockers who it freezes completely over, which tells to me it's probably not a spring-fed pond. But also, the fish need oxygen all winter long, and so that oxygen level is going to go decrease as long as the ice is completely over the water.
Yeah, and it's pretty limited, probably, the amount of oxygen you can artificially introduce into the
Yeah, they do have fountains now, and of course heating coils, which can keep some of those areas open a little bit. But we're going to want to make sure that there is some oxygen in the water. And as far as a formula, I don't have one that I'd be that I can pass on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I ask these tough questions.
I know. I'm getting nervous over here.
Things
I want to make sure I give people helpful information, not the wrong information tonight.
Things I think about. Well, that's all right.
There are fountains in the summer, too, which will keep your summer oxygen levels up. And also, if you do have oxygen that you're using and you're adding it through a fountain, generally speaking, it'll keep some of those algae blooms, which completely take over your pond. It'll keep those at bay. So those man-made options like fountains are a good choice that a serious pond stocker might consider.
Okay. You ever use blue vitriol to keep the algae out?
Yep. I have heard of that one. And that'll generally, it'll kill off the algae, and it'll also take care of some of the aquatic life, like the lily pads and the cattails around the edge. So you want to, I would just say, just be cautious with those chemicals like that, and know that that is a control method, and it is, you should take it pretty seriously when you're adding chemicals to a pond like that.
Yeah, are there they good? They used to use blue vitriol in the town water in the ponds that they get the water from. Keep the algae blooms down in the aquatic.
Is there good aquatic, plants and bad
plants? Yeah, you know, just the biodiversity of a pond. There will be some aquatic life, some aquatic plants in there. But the algae bloom is just a good indicator because in the daytime, your oxygen levels are going to be really high. And then in the winter, in the nighttime when you have that algae bloom, the oxygen level is going to be real low. So it just consumes the oxygen at a rapid rate when you have a pond that's experiencing what we call an algae bloom,
Yeah. Well, speaking of consuming things at a rapid rate, General Appliance.
Yes.
Over in Brewer. They have a rapid rate over there of satisfaction. Because everything that Al Elkin touches turns to gold. I don't think that's his motto or slogan, but it should be. Because everybody that you talk to that has dealt with Al Elkin over there for gas appliances or services or anything like that has said nothing but good things about him. So he has a great track record. He's located over on Center Street in Brewer, and he has just about anything you need for your gas appliance services. He does the Servel line. He does the Unique line. He has refrigerators, he has stoves, he has composting toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
One of these days he's going to miss it, but it's not today.
Jim, he joins us up at the Presque Isle Sportsman Show, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. He always has some pretty innovative things for those folks who are off-grid and using some of those gas appliances, even the propane lighting.
Oh, absolutely. You'll recognize him. He had that pinstripe conductor's hat, railroad conductor's hat that he always wears. He goes to the Presque Isle Sportsman Show. I know he goes to the Orono Sportsman Show. You see him over there. He reaches out and tries to do as much as he can for the folks that want to live the gas life. And he has other appliances over there as well, not just necessarily all gas appliances, but he specializes in gas appliances and services them.
You know, Jimmy, he has a gas light that doesn't make all that noise, and you just push a button and they light. You just don't have to lift the mantle and try to burn yourself or the house down.
Yeah.
My cousin Lorraine bought one for her new home down in Hartford, Maine, and she claims it works excellent.
Well, there. Sounds like a way to go. So if you have anything, you have gas lights at your camp or even at your house or out in the shed or the garage, give Al Elkin a call, 989 4341. He's located on 91 Center Street in Brewer, Maine. And tell him the Maine Outdoors crew sent you.
Yes, sir.
Just like that. If you're just joining us, my name is Jim Thorne with the Northwoods Sporting Journal, your host for the evening. My guest this evening is Jacob Pelkey. He is the marketing manager for the Micmac Farms up in Caribou, Maine. And his specialty is we're talking about brook trout. Maine, I'm going to call them native, brook trout, that he does up there. They grow them. And we never did come back and readdress the question, had you ever thought of any other type of species besides brook trout?
Yeah, we've thought about Arctic char, and also we've thought about the eels, the elwives.
Okay.
We've just thought those would be awesome connections.
A lot of money in that, isn't there?
Oh, huge. Yeah, but no, we've come accustomed. We've done really well with the brook trout, coming up with ways to do this project sustainably and to raise them, that we have a really high success rate from egg up until that 17-inch size. And we've really gotten quite comfortable with the brook trout. And I think there's just so much potential with the brook trout. You know, as a sportsman, Jim, that when you go fishing, that's the prize fish here in Maine.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So a lot of times...
Is there a way that someone can contact you if they want to find out more information about this, or maybe if they want to make arrangements to see whether or not you're able to stock their pond? How far do you go? Do you go within the state of Maine?
Yep, we're within the state of Maine. So we actually go all the way down to Farmington, all the way down to Kittery, all the way up to Fort Kent. Right there in Caribou, we do have a delivery truck to bring the live fish right down.
And I imagine that there is some sort of order reserve.
Yeah,
because you can't, give everybody fish, and sometimes it takes a while to raise the fish to the size that you need to stock them, right?
Yep. So folks can go ahead and order brook trout right through their local soil and water conservation districts, right there in Farmington, Belfast, Blue Hill, Fort Kent, Presque Isle, Holton, right here in Bangor. And what they'll do is they'll just call the local number, and they'll make sure that you have a state of Maine pond stocking permit, and they'll take a request for how many numbers of fish you'd like to pick up on the specified date. So we deliver through the month of May and June, and we'll meet those soil and water conservation districts once a year. Or if they want, they can call me up at Micmac Farms at 207-493-1269. And we may be able to make a special delivery.
That sounds good. I don't mean to blindside you, but are you following the Belfast fishery at all?
No, this is an exciting time in aquaculture, Jim. Yeah, so Belfast is proposing, are you talking about the salmon project or the yellowtail?
Yeah, the salmon project.
Yep, so Belfast and Bucksport are looking at salmon, and Jonesport is actually a third one that's looking at something called a yellowtail, which is popular in sushis.
Uh-huh. Tuna?
Tuna, it sounds like.
I think it is a type of tuna. I don't know.
I think yellowtail might be.
Yeah. Yellowtail, but...
Maybe I'm thinking yellowfin.
Yeah, that's true.
There or bluefin.
We digress and babble. Continue.
Yeah, no, this is an exciting time in aquaculture, and I think it is... Maine has really clean water. And that's what's really desirable for these operations. Now, millions of pounds of fish in production, those are going to be amazing operations. And as we expand our brook trout hatchery up in Caribou, we're looking at increasing to thousands of pounds, something that we can ensure that our waste that we're producing, we can recapture and actually use that on the produce fields there at Micmac Farms. So when we look at these other aquaculture firms downstate, we're listening and watching these innovations take place here in Maine, and it is exciting.
And I did see how your water filtration, how you take that dirty water, I guess, for lack of calling it anything else.
Useful water.
Useful water. Got to learn these politically correct terms, Norm.
Yes, and
well, we are using groundwater, Jim, which is quite different than a lot of aquaculture facilities. And so by using groundwater and having an indoor facility where the fish are raised, we can eliminate pesticide or chemical runoff from the potato fields up in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also eliminate disease that would otherwise come in if we use a surface water.
Right.
So as we don't use chemicals or antibiotics at the hatchery, we want to make sure we can control that as much as we can.
Yes.
And so all the water at the hatchery, we only have 1,000 gallons coming in every day, and then we have 1,000 gallons which leaves the building. But what we do is,
and I was amazed at how I could walk into a big open, you know, for lack of a better term, hangar area.
What,
my 10,000 square feet?
Yeah, it's 100 by 45, so 4,500, I guess.
Okay, so half of that.
Man, we're not as big as Walmart.
I'm like Mike down there estimating how many fish. I'm about halfway there, but that's okay. You'll get me there. But I was surprised that it didn't have an odor like there's 50,000 fish swimming around in the water. I mean, I go to some waters, some like pond in the river or something up in the Rangeley area, and I can smell that there's fish in the water because I can smell the fish. And there's really no odor right there in that area. So it's pretty amazing. And they're all lively. They're all
They're healthy. Still jumping just like they do in the wild. Yeah. They have those instincts when you go up to the edge of the tank to still dart down away from you a little bit.
Yeah. But they do that when I throw a fly at them too.
No, we didn't let Jim bring a rod into the building.
Wouldn't have done any good anyway.
Hey, thanks to Google, we know what yellowtail is that they use for sushi. It's actually a Japanese amberjack.
Amberjack.
Okay.
Is what? Yeah. So I thought I better look it up just to make sure, so people out there will also know what it is. But
yeah, I was just talking to them this week. So now, if they hear me, they're going to be like, "He wasn't listening."
No. Well, that is interesting, and we're gonna follow that and get more information on that, because that's
2 minutes.
I think there is a pro and con to that a lot of people were talking about, and I don't know if pollution came into it, or waste, or fish waste or whatever came into play. But
well, I think it's good people are asking questions. I know
the more you know, the more you learn.
Jacob, I can't wait to see him in the stores locally here so I can go buy one.
We'll stop into Jess's Market in Portland, or Jess's Market in Rockland, or Harbor Fish Market in Portland, and we hope to have him here in the Bangor area pretty soon.
Oh,
but
that'd be wonderful.
Always open up at the hatchery. Folks stop in every day of the week for a tour, and we let them right in.
And you're right on the road, Route 1 between Holton and Holton.
Right between Caribou and Prescott, right on the city line, yeah.
But it is on Route 1.
Yep, right on Route 1.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, Jacob, I know eventually we're going to run out of time tonight, so I don't want to fail to say thank you for coming down. We appreciate it. I think it's very interesting what you're doing, and only going to get bigger from what I understand. And I know the product. I've seen it, and the brook trout are amazing.
Awesome.
You guys do a great job with them. You know your stuff up there, and that certainly bodes well for Maine when we go forward from here. And I just want to let the crew know, and all the listeners, that I was in communication with V. Paul Reynolds today. Ooh. And he says hello and sends his love to everybody, and letting everybody know he's down there at Maine Outdoors Southern Headquarters in Florida.
On a sailboat.
In his T-shirt and shorts.
And he's thinking of us, so I told him we'd do a shout out, so everybody knows that our Southern Command is alive and well there in Florida. And next weekend, I won't have the show. Next weekend will be Greg Burr, and I'm sure Greg will have an exciting guest talking about all things in the Maine outdoors. So my thanks to my guest, Jacob Pelkey.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Thank you, Norm and Jim, for coming in tonight and being our friends. And join us right here next week on
The Maine Outdoors.